flying south for the winter. The V formation, the honking that takes place. The first thing we pointed out is that they fly in the V formation, and they have at least 71% greater flying range than if each bird flew on its own. And when a goose, the second thing is, when a goose falls out of the formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of trying to go it alone, and it quickly gets back into the formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird in front of it. We, of course, liken that to the drafting that car racers do, particularly NASCAR and those that go that fast. It makes a difference. Now, the third thing that I want to talk about the geese is when the head goose gets tired, it rotates to the back of the wing and another goose flies the point. Okay? Remember, at the point, he's not getting any benefit. It's like going it alone. Now, the one behind him gets some benefit and the one behind them gets benefited too and so on. But if you look at Galatians chapter 6, please. Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." Here's the verse I'm going for. "Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." When that head goose gets tired, it goes to the back and gets the benefit of the rest of the group. And so it is in the Christian life and in the church life. There's times where a person may feel like it's going it alone, like it's taking and sharing, bearing most of the effort that's being put forth on something. And verse 2 says, "Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing." I like that. Person thinks themselves to be something, but the Lord says, when he's nothing? Okay. In other words, he's got a different opinion of himself than what the Lord has. "If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another." Here it is. "For every man shall bear his own burden." Now you see verse 2? What's verse 2 says? "Bear ye one another's burdens." Now here in verse 5 it says, "Let every man bear his own burden." And you know, for the longest time I'd read that and say, well, which way is it? You bear another, you bear it yourself. Just like that goose flying at the head. It's putting out the effort. It's giving benefit to the ones behind. And it's bearing its own burden. But then it gets tired. And it can't, you know, it needs to take a break. So it rotates to the back. And another one comes up to the front. Bearing another's burden, but bearing their own. When he's out front there flying, he's flapping on his own. He's bearing his own burden. And listen, there are some burdens that we have that others can't bear.
That's right.
I mean, you just have to bear it alone. Now, that doesn't mean others can't know what it is, that others shouldn't pray for you about it. It's just that no one else can do anything except the Lord. And so we bear, in that sense, we bear it alone. And so when the goose gets tired, he has to rotate back. Sharing the load is better than complaining, okay? And that's too easily and too frequently what happens, rather than bearing the burden. Now, in order for somebody else to bear it, they have to know that you have a burden, okay? If we cannot share, I like that Pastor commended Chris, and I too commend Chris, because most people that I know would not say, "Hey, I just made some real progress in math and reading." Did you say? In math and reading. Now, I wouldn't most say that, because by now, most have gone through that. But Chris is saying, "I'm just now going through it." Now, the rest of us can bear the burden with him. He doesn't have to be out in the point flying alone. You see? Because now the rest of us can flap our wings and let him, you know, get benefit from that in the sense of praying for him. And so that was the what's what happens when the head goose gets tired. He goes back and lets somebody else do the hard one. Now the next one here is geese honk from behind. You ever wonder why they honk? Well, that's just what geese do. You know, why do dogs bark? Well, that's what dogs do, you know. There's reasons why they do these things, you see. Why do people talk? Some people say, well, that's because that's all that he can do. That's all she does, you know. That's what they do. No, there's reasons why the geese honk. And according to the gooseologists who studied this, you can get a degree in gooseology. Look it up on Google. See, Google and geese, they go together. Google and goose. I can tell some of you don't believe me. Especially Tim, he just sits there looking at me starry-eyed. Okay. According to this, geese honk from behind to encourage those up front to keep up their speed. You know, when we're serving the Lord in the church, we can get weary and we can slow down. And sometimes all it takes is an attaboy. All it takes is somebody to come to us and say, "Hey, I appreciated what you did down there. I appreciate what you did over there." Or what, you know, just a kind word, just an encouraging word can help a person keep on keeping on. That's the way the old saints used to say it. Keep on keeping on. And the geese would do it to keep the one in front of it, keeping its speed and keeping it flying, and that's what we need to do. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 7. Deuteronomy 31:7. "And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him in the sight of all Israel, Be strong and of a good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed." The Lord, here we see Moses encouraging Joshua. Joshua is taking over that key leadership position. And so he got these encouraging words from Moses. If you please, the endorsement of Moses for the task that Joshua was going to do. Now we're going to go back to the book of Hebrews. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, where we read a New Testament passage. Okay, Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. Well, you know, you're going to get slow. You need somebody to come along and encourage you. You need somebody to come along and tell you that that was a good job you did there. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. For he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another. Help somebody today. Somebody along life's way. Okay? Let us consider one another and provoke unto love and to good works. Don't provoke people into negative reactions. Don't interact with people in a way that causes them to be downcast and discouraged and give up. Don't say anything if you can't encourage somebody. Provoke unto love and good works. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Exhorting one another. Now, still in Hebrews, but go in the beginning of the book to chapter 3. In Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13, we read, exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. So we need to encourage each other. Well, you know, there may be somebody that's just ready to quit, just ready to give up. You know, outwardly, it may not show that they're so discouraged. Outwardly, we may not see it. But inwardly, that's how they're feeling. And it's not impossible that there's times where somebody's in church and they're thinking to themselves, this is the last Sunday I'm going to come. I just can't handle it anymore. I can't put up with it. And they're going to quit. Now listen, if the Lord prompts you to say something nice to somebody, if the Lord prompts you to encourage somebody, if the Lord prompts you to do something for somebody, say it, do it, because you never know what that can mean to that person. And that might be to a child as well as to an adult. Chapter 3, exhort one another, lest any of you be hardened. You see, when a person's at that point of giving up and quitting, there's some things in their life that isn't right. Okay, now whether it's things they did or things some other people have done to them, that's not the point now. They're ready to quit. They're ready to give up. What's the use? Why bother? And we need to exhort one another so that they don't give up and they're not hardened in that. There are people that are not here sitting in these pews tonight because they reached a point in their life where that was their experience and they just gave up. Now, not everybody that's not here. Some just flat out backslid and ran away from God. But I'm talking about those who, they were trying. Met hardships and they met difficulties and they just got overwhelmed and discouraged. You know, I really do believe that God would have had somebody say something to them. Now, maybe they did, and the person just ignored it. But you see, when the Lord prompts me to say something, I'm not responsible for their reaction. I'm just responsible to say it, to do it. And then the Lord can take it and handle it from there. Okay, the last thing here. And this is important, when a goose gets sick or wounded, like maybe by gunshot, you know, hunters out there, oh, it's awful, out there shooting Oh, those poor little geese, and they're getting shot. Anyway,
suck it up.
Suck it up, that's right. And so we covered that on Sunday in the Sunday school lesson. All meat is given for man's consumption, all right? So, don't get me going. But, you know, a goose might get sick. It might get, shot out of the air and it falls out of formation. Here, this I found fascinating. Two other geese fall out of that formation, follow the wounded or the sick one down to the ground, and there they help protect it. And they'll stay with it until it either gets better and can fly again, or until it dies. And then those two geese will themselves either go it alone, which we know from what was said last week is very difficult, they'll likely join another formation. You know, there's times people move away geographically and they're not part of the church. There's other reasons why people may get out of the formation of one church, but we need to get in the formation of another church. You say, that's important, because it's in the fellowship of the church that we get that encouragement of other people. And that's why it's so important, friends. This is not about you. This is about the Lord. And what the Lord will do through you, and what he'll do through you, will at times benefit other people. You see, if we just look at ourselves, and if we just focus on our needs, that's selfish. And then we can't, it's not going to work. Because we can't take care of ourselves. But that's what we're trying. But when we follow the Lord and we live for the Lord, then he will begin to meet our needs, either he directly to us or through each other. He'll meet our needs. Bill's in a lot of pain. I wonder how many times in the past he's been in pain and somebody sending a text, "Hey, thinking about you, brother, praying for you." Oh, it didn't take the pain away, but it helped him to bear it. You see, that's a pain he has to bear. Bear your own burden. I can't bear that pain though. But I can bear his burden in the sense of praying for him and being an encouragement. And it's the same way for yourself. You say, "Well, I don't get that sort of thing." Well, here again, are you living for the Lord? Are you focusing on the Lord? And then the next thing is be involved in other people's lives. Now, I don't mean be a Budinsky, okay? I'm not talking about, being a busybody, but just get involved in other people's lives. Now, over there on the table, we have sign-up sheets for the Amish Awareness Conference. We need some food donated, okay, some things to be made. And we have a nursery. We're going to have a staff nursery. We need workers for there. Now listen, don't look at that sheet and wait and see who all else signs up. Maybe I don't have to if everybody else signs up.
Yes,
sir. That's not the way to be in the church. If you love kids and can handle kids and take, you don't want to put me in the nursery. That wouldn't be good. Okay? My wife did fine with our kids. And you don't want me in the nursery. You got the connection there? Seriously, if you can work in there. And some men are great with kids. Some men like to get down there. I volunteered to go in the nursery a couple of times. And I did my thing for God and country and the church. They said, thanks, Pastor, but we'll take care of it for you. And that's okay. You see what I'm getting at? In order to get from others, you need to give to others. So there's sign-ups over there that you can sign up to do and to help, and it's great to see that. And so these last scriptures here is from Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one, because they have good reward for their labor. If they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Now in that same passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12 says, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And so we need each other. But not just that we come, we sit in our pew, and we look and we see each other. We need to be involved with each other. Now listen, one person, no one person can be involved in every other person. Okay? Chris can't be involved in every individual here that's sitting around. Okay? He can't be involved in everybody's life. But he can have an involvement in two or three people. Same way, there's Stephen. You see? Stephen can have an involvement in everybody else's life that's here in the church. There's just not enough time. There's just not enough of one person to be involved in everybody. So what you do is you have some that you have a natural inclination to, okay, compatibility with. Those are the easy ones. But then you ask the Lord, who else might you want me to be involved with? And then you let the Lord lead you and use you in such a manner. And that's how we work. And I'm gonna finish with this. Jerry Falwell, who is dead and in heaven now, but he built one of the first really super large independent Baptist churches, Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia. And he wrote a book, Church of Flame. The thing that I remember out of that book, he was criticized because in a church of, I think at that point, 5,000, which that's a big church, but there are a number of churches that are much bigger. But anyway, he was criticized because it's so big, people can't know each other. You're just like a stranger there. Then he explained this. First of all, the Sunday schools were used to give that small group meeting place, okay? The Sunday school classes, and actually it's the Southern Baptists that first used that method, where the Sunday school classes in those super big churches would be where people had that kind of interaction like we have here. But the next key thing that he said, no matter what size church it is, a given individual will only have an actual close relationship with two or three people. He went on to explain, the church might be 5,000, but any given individual is only going to have a close relationship with two or three. Now, I don't know, you might say three or four. He said, the thing is, in a smaller church like ours, and even, you know, 100, 150, 200, you know each other to see by face. And so we come in here and we know, we recognize each other's face. We even know each other's first name. But you'd be surprised how many people have said to me, who's that older couple sits over here? He walks with a cane. Well, now they know because Pastor had him give his testimony. That's Carl. What's his last name? Yeah. But you got the point? There's some people sitting here who didn't know his last name. And until Pastor had him stand up front, they didn't even know who he was. That old couple that comes in. Why? Because you only have a close relationship with, let's say, 2 to 4 people, no matter what the size church is. You know others by name, but what do you know about? I like to talk about him. What do I really know about him? I know he's a pastor's son. I know he's a nice fella. And I mean that seriously. I'm not joking. He's a nice fella. I know he's a willing worker and a hard worker because of a couple of projects I've seen around here. And I know he's going, is it Alfred? You see, I'm not really sure where he's going. What more do I know? I don't know what colors he likes. I don't know what foods he likes. I don't know what entertainments he likes. But somebody that I know personally, I know those things about them. Why? Because I know them personally. Now, what's the point? The point is simply this. Forget about the size of the church. And really, you need to forget about the fact that we're a small church. Because we tend to feel like we don't have to work at developing the kind of relationships that we need. But we do. They don't merely happen simply because we're in a small church. And we do know one thing that can come in a small church. Disgruntledness, anger and upset, bickering, and fussing. We know that comes. But you have to work at the other stuff, don't you? You know why? Because the old nature naturally produces the negative. But we have to be yielded to the new nature so that God can produce the positive. Father in heaven, you've created so many things that we can learn from. And I pray, dear Father, that we would learn from these things that we've seen regarding